Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part one of episode number 242, Homemade 60 Music Podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. Hello, so first of all, I'd like to welcome all you to part one of episode number 242, Homemade 60 Music Podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or on iHeartRadio, or on hopefully YouTube Music soon, we'll see. I'm still trying to figure that out. It's Google Podcast is no longer exists. Trying to move my podcast over to YouTube Music, but it's a little difficult for me to do that right now. I'm having little issues, so just stick with Spotify right now. If you're an Android user listening to this podcast, or Player FM on Spotify, and they're wondering, so what the heck is them to give you a prescription? What this show is all about? Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 28-year-old songwriter slash producer. But I'm also a huge 60 Music fan slash expert slash nerd. Each week of this podcast, I take one song by one artist in the 60s, split it in two parts. First part, I talk about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good or why I think it sucks, and into my own personality and the range of the song, which will include the chords, melody, and lyrics. And the second part, I show you deep into the history behind that track. In that part, I talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, talk about the songwriters who wrote the song, producer, the producer, talk about the session players who play on the song, talk about the history behind the songwriter who wrote the song and the musicians on the session or the band members if it was recorded by a band, and the peak musician song way up originally in Billboard 100 charts first came out, and the year when the song was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Now, before we move on with this week's episode of this podcast, there's one thing I kind of want to talk about with you guys, and it's something that is kind of bothering me. It really is what it is. I can't really do much about it, and it's something frustrating me. The more time goes by, and the more I'm realizing this is kind of how our society is now. When it comes to capitalism, right, and working to survive and making sure that you're able to pay your bills and have a place to live and just live in society. We all have certain things that we want to do, right? And things that we want to do and dreams that we want to accomplish. But a lot of times when it comes to what we want to do and what we're offering to people, what's really unfortunate and really frustrating that I'm starting to realize this is that sometimes what we're doing is exactly what other people want. Like, it's exactly what other people are interested in, exactly what other people need. But then other times, what we want isn't what other people are interested in, it isn't what other people need. And you have to do other things that may not be your strong passion, or you may not be something you're experienced with. But the fact of the matter is that that's what people want. That's what people need. And that's really, really frustrating. For me, that's frustrating is because I want people to subscribe to the premium version of my podcast, right? So that way they can hear all these interview episodes. And I want other people, other companies that make movies and TV shows and commercials to license my music. It seems like it's if I just stick with my areas of interest, what I'm good at, and what I'm the most passionate about, it's not always going to be something that other people are interested in or going to want or need. Now, take for example, if I want to stick with what I'm interested in, what I care about the most, then it's a 1,000% a dice roll in terms of finding other people that want it and need it, right? Versus if I try to do something that's more typical of what 90% of people want, then, you know, then it's more of a guarantee. It's more of a for certain thing that I'll be able to make money and support myself. And that's really, really frustrating. You know, because I'm hoping that other, you know, and I'm trying to reverse this thinking in my head that nobody wants to hear these interview episodes. And I'm hoping that there's other people that want to hear these interview episodes. I know there's other people who want to hear these interview episodes, but my head's sort of in that space of only the elderly people who were there back in the 60s, the old people who want to hear these interview episodes. And I keep trying to tell myself that's not true, that there are, you know, young people who collect records and collect vintage clothing that would absolutely love these interview episodes. They would just get a kick out of all this information that these people are giving me on my podcast. And, you know, and I also, I'm trying to tell myself that other companies, like people who make movies, TV shows, commercials, other companies want my kind of music that I do, that they're going to want to license it because, you know, in that world, every kind of music is needed, you know. And, well, yeah, some music is, there's more of a demand for a certain kind of music than others, but there's all kinds of music that's needed for film, TV, and ads. You know, and I'm trying to tell myself that, with that being said, you know, since they've been pitching my music, my music library that I'm signed to right now, they've been pitching my music for such a long time, different opportunities, all those opportunities want my kind of music. They want that style that I have. And they were able to get me a placement recently with an opportunity that went through. They licensed my song, and that's great. So I just have to keep telling myself that more of those are coming. You know, even despite whether people say that's going to be difficult for me to get more of those, you know, I just have to keep trusting that what I'm doing right now is exactly what other people want and need. You know, I'm trying to tell myself that and trust that my premium version of my podcast, there's an audience for that, and it's not just the baby boomers, but it's young people too. You know, despite what I see on Facebook about all these, you know, people my dad's age going crazy about oldies, and, you know, it's just, I have to try to tell myself that there are young people that would really appreciate this information that my podcast guests are giving me. There is an audience of those young people who would really like it. So anyways, that's just what's been going through my mind lately. I'm staying on this high, and I'm trying not to discourage myself, and not trying to get down on myself, despite the fact that, you know, sooner than later, I'm going to need to find a place to live and need to be able to support myself and, you know, live a comfortable living, or be able to, you know, pay for all my expenses and, you know, just be able to afford to live in LA, you know, considering how expensive that is. And, you know, I have to keep telling myself that I will be able to do that. What I'm doing is valued. It's needed. Other people want it. And it's going to pay my bills one day. It really, really is. And even if the money is small right now, it's not big. Eventually, the money's going to get bigger. So I'm just trying to tell myself that. I'm trying to stay positive. But anyways, let's get started in this week's episode. All right. So I you know, it's funny, you know, when I do this podcast, the solo version, half the time I have no idea what song I want to talk about. You know, it's just like, it's super random what songs I discuss. I try to make the decision by asking myself, have I talked about this sort of group of this sort of part of 60 music history before recently? Is it something like, have I done a British artist before, and like recently, or have I done a Chicago artist? Have I done a New York artist, LA, Nashville, you know, Philadelphia? Have I done one of these artists recently? Am I going to be talking about something I've already talked about in the past with this podcast? And, you know, because I'm trying to give you guys repeated information, but sometimes it's hard not to be honest with you guys, because, you know, I've been doing this podcast for so long. and just do, you know, doing these premium, these free episodes that sometimes it's hard to not repeat myself with information. But, you know, I have no idea, you know, who's listening to this podcast now, and if they're brand new to the podcast or they've been listening from the beginning. So yeah, I always have to remind myself that, you know, the person who might be listening to this episode now might be listening to my show for the first time, and this might be all fresh information for this person who's listening. I do have to keep that in mind for myself. So if I'm repeating, I'm sorry if you're a longtime listener, if I'm repeating information, but, you know, I may not be for certain people who might stumble across this podcast. Because I notice a lot of my listeners come from just Spotify searching, so people are actually looking at my show on Spotify, so it's kind of crazy. This next song I'm going to talk about with you guys, it's kind of crazy. It's really, really ahead of its time in terms of the lyrics. It's just crazy how ahead of its time it is. Because this lyrics talk about something that you would think of more like 2024 now. But, you know, the thing is that the song came out 6 years ago, in 1964. So, I mean, you know, to think that, you know, they were talking about this in a very innocent time period of, you know, young romance and just, you know, being with someone forever and ever and ever. And the fact that they were talking about the polar opposite of that in this song 60 years ago, it's crazy. I mean, it's crazy the lyrics of the song were so ahead of its time that even though they're innocent when you listen to them, it's one of those songs that it does talk about something that, you know, isn't so innocent under the surface. And, you know, when you listen to on the surface, all these lyrics sound very innocent, but under the surface, it's actually a little bit more adult. And it's crazy that they were like talking about this. And, you know, even like this is even like a talking point for lyrics to a song. Not only that, the song is a huge hit. The song was a top 10 record when it came out. It was really, really big. But it's a fun song, and I can't wait to dive into the song, analyzing it for you. Okay, so the song came out in July 1964. It's by an artist named Gail Garnett. The name of the song is called We'll Sing in the Sunshine. Oh my God, this is such a great song. And normally I don't do back-to-back female artists, but when this song came to mind to me recently, and just discovering something new about it recently, because I discovered something new about the song recently, I'm like, holy shit, I gotta talk about the song. It's a really fun song. Not super upbeat, but still really cool to listen to. There's a lot of cool things in the arrangement of the song that are worth talking about. And I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about this with my song, talking about the range for it. So let's do that. Let's talk about the song's music, and we'll get into lyrics later. But as always, let's get to the music. Okay, so this song is a folk song, but it's a freaking cool folk song. Oh my God. It's not just, you know, because a lot of folk songs from this era, I mean, they were so basic, just acoustic guitar, banjo, that's it. I mean, and vocals. Like, they would sing the song and then play the song on their acoustic guitars, and it was more about the harmonies for a lot of folk songs back in the 60s. But this song, you know, the arranger for the song was brilliant because he added on all these different colors with the arrangement, and it's more than your just basic folk song with just acoustic guitar and voice and maybe an upright bass, maybe not. But that was just sort of the thing about acoustic folk music. I mean, Kingston Trio, Peter Paul and Mary, it's like acoustic guitar, upright bass, that's it, and vocals. But this song is a folk song, but it's got some cool instrumentation going on here. It's not just acoustic guitar and maybe banjo. I think there's banjo here. I think it's hard to tell, but I'm pretty sure there's banjo, but there's acoustic guitar, but there's a couple other cool instruments in this song that are really, really cool. You know, and one of them is harmonica. There is a beautiful harmonica part in this song. It is so cool. I mean, those long notes that the harmonica player plays are just beautiful. They just really take your breath away. The harmonica pops in at the perfect time in the intro, in the verses, and in the choruses, at the right spot in the choruses, and in the right spots in the verses. It's such a beautiful part. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And when you hear the harmonica part, again, it makes you think to yourself, God damn it, why did that studio musician who played the harmonica part in this song did not get credit? I mean, really? I mean, he, you know, what can you listen to the song without the harmonica part? You can't. You know, the harmonica part is so distinctive that you would think that when they released the album that the song was on, they would have put his name on saying, this dude played the harmonica, or so-and-so played the harmonica on We'll Sing in the Sunshine, but they didn't. The only guy who got credit for the song were the arranger and the producer, and the person who sang the song also wrote it. But the point I'm trying to make here is that it's so annoying that the harmonica player did not get credit, because his part is so distinctive and it's so important to the song that it's hard to imagine the song without the harmonica. It really, really is. And look, obviously, you know, this is New York City, right? So, you know, everything was written out by the arrangers, super, super tight. There wasn't a whole lot of room for improvisation, but that was mostly demo sessions on for New York sessions. It was just like everyone was reading from the sheet music, but done by the arrangers. Everything was worked out ahead of time. But still, like, you know, this is the era before MIDI, before you can just punch in a harmonica part in a keyboard. You had to hire a harmonica player if you want to get a harmonica on your song. So the harmonica player should have gotten credit, because really, without the harmonica part, it's hard to really hear the song without it. And the trumpet part's really, really cool too. It almost kind of sounds like the trumpet player is using a specific mute in the song, but I can't tell exactly what mute that is. But again, the trumpet part's beautiful. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, it's in the exact spot of the song you want to hear, and the verses, very end too. I mean, and I love how for different verses, there's different instruments. For different verses, you hear the harmonica. Different verses, you hear the trumpet. And this is all, you know, chef's kiss when it comes to coming up with arrangements for songs, right? Having different instruments for different parts of the song, bringing things in, bringing things out, then bringing them back in for different parts of the song and bringing them about. I mean, that's just exactly what you want for arrangements for songs. To have different sections having different instruments, and it's just great because it gives the listeners enough ear candy to be able to, you know, not get bored with the song. Because if it's the same instruments throughout the whole song, and a listener could easily get bored because there's nothing changing. But when you add in those different instruments in different parts of the song, it makes the listener interested in hearing the whole song versus just a little bit of it. So it's really, really cool that the arranger for the song decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to come up with a harmonica part for this song. I'm going to come up with a trumpet part. I'm going to add the song, because I'm sure that since it was a folk song, I'm almost positive that the songwriter wrote this. It was just acoustic guitar and, you know, vocals, and that's it. And the arranger was brought in to add in all these different colors to the song to make it sound more interesting other than just standard acoustic guitar and voice. And I love the background parts of the song, too, and the chorus. It's so cool. I love that. And they're just so blended in with the lead vocal. It's just it's hard to kind of hear the background vocals, but it's really, really cool to just hear the blend of those background vocals with the lead vocal and the chorus. It's just amazing. And honestly, there's no drums, but guess what? For folk music, no drums are necessary. I mean, for folk Americana, like bluegrass stuff, there's no need for drums. You know, the rhythm, a lot of times, is created by the acoustic guitar, and that's your drummer in folk music. It's really, I mean, you know, your drummer is your rhythm, the acoustic guitar, and maybe a cajon these days, but really, it's all about your acoustic guitar. That's where your rhythm comes from. That's your timekeeper with acoustic folk music, is your acoustic guitar, right? And that's kind of how it is with the song, because there's no drums. You cannot, there's like literally, they when the session was booked for the song, the producer was like, I don't want drums on this. The arranger is like, cool, you don't want drums, fine, we won't have any drums in the song. So, you know, and the producer was smart because he knew he was going to the studio to record a folk song, you know, and not like a pop song, you know. So he was like, you know what, I don't want drums in the song. And the singer was like, cool, fine, we won't have drums. And the arranger is like, cool, that's great, we won't have drums either. So that's a really cool part about the song. The arrangement's beautiful. The long notes play on the trumpet's really cool, and so is the harmonica. It's a very, very cool song with just those little touches with the instrumentation. It is really, really cool. I really, really enjoy that. Anyways, we should talk about the chord progression. I won't spend too much time on this, but it's pretty standard. I mean, it's kind of interesting because a lot of the reverse typical chord progression. I mean, it's 1-5-4, 2-5-1 in the chorus, And, you know, it's in B. So B is a tough key to play because there's so many sharps or flats in the key. It's big. And there's a lot of sharps in the key of B. So it's kind of hard key to play in. But it's basically, you know, 1-5-4 and 2-5-1 in the chorus. And the end of the second chorus, it just hangs on the 2 chord. And then it kind of does this cool thing. It's like in the verse, 1-1-7, 2-5, and then 2-5-1. And then it kind of just kind of goes down again, 1-7, 2-5-1. You know, there's some typical chord. It's interesting because it's not your standard 1-6-4-5-1-6-2-5. But it's kind of interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's not much to talk about here when it comes to chord progression. There's no major sevens in this, but hey, you know, it's folk music. Folk music is mostly built on triads anyways. But anyways, let's get into the song's music, the lyrics actually. But yeah, I mean, the trumpet player should have gotten credit too. I mean, like, can you imagine the song without the trumpet part? I mean, it's a really, really cool part of the song. I mean, he should have gotten credit as well. The harmonica player and the trumpet player both should have gotten credit because they're so distinctive in the song. Like, you know, it's annoying because Larry Nechtel got credit for his solo piano work on Bridge Over Troubled Water, and it was a single credit, but didn't happen until like early 1970 because the song was released in late 1969. So why did it take so long for session players to get credit? I mean, I don't get it. Like, this should have happened way earlier than that, for singles at least. I mean, there were some albums that did credit session players, but most of the time it didn't happen. You know, so really, they should have gotten credit on singles. They really should have. But yeah, so, I mean, because if they got credit on singles, they would have been way busier, you know, because their name would have been out there a lot, and they would have, you know, been known. You know, the work would have been known, and other producers in the industry would have found out about them, and they would have gotten more work. You know, and other people would know about them as well. The record buying public would have been curious about who they were, and you know, they would have known about them as well, instead of like years and years later in documentaries and stuff. But yeah, so now let's talk about the song's lyrics. So here's the thing about this song. It is so ahead of its time, and here's why. We often, you know, in society now, you often hear about like young girls singing about, like, you know, it's sort of this thing where it's like, you know, the term that millennials use now to describe like short-term non-monogamous relationships, where it's like friends with benefits. I mean, that's one term, right, that's been used in recent years. But in more recent years, you hear singers singing about, you know, what a lot of girls say. They call these relationships situationships. And that's when you're just fooling around with your guy and you're doing it, but you're not there, but you're not like, it's not, you guys aren't officially together. And this is all happening. And I'm like, what are we? Like, what's going on? Are we like officially locked in as boyfriend and girlfriend, or are we not? Or on the flip side, maybe it's just they're doing that, but it's short term, meaning it's not going to last forever. You're not going to find that person that you're going to spend the rest of your life with till death to you part. And it's just a short term thing. And oftentimes this happens with girls who don't live in, who are foreign. Like, maybe they're here on visas. Maybe they're just not. They're only here temporarily, because they weren't born in the country that you live in. You know, and this song is a perfect example of that. Because one thing I'll tell you about the singer of the song is that she was originally from a foreign country. You know, so she wasn't American, right? But she, I think she did have some kind of visa, or maybe she got citizenship because, you know, she did, you know, maybe not at the time she had citizenship. I'm not 100% sure. I don't know. Maybe she had citizenship back then. I don't know. Maybe she just had a visa, or maybe she, you know, that's true. She could have had a visa, and this song would have made sense because the song is about a girl that's saying, hey, you know what? I'm not going to, you know, basically say that I'm going to be with you forever, and I'm not going to be like, I'm going to love you forever and ever, you know, until death do we part. But we, you know, we can be together for a year and we can have fun, And, you know, and the lyrics of the song, it's very innocent. It's a, you know, it's about singing and laughing. And but maybe it's about under it's the reason I think the reason why the lyrics are like that is because it's the 60s and you can't say we're going to screw each other on top 40 radio back then. You couldn't. So you instead you had to say lyrics like we'll sing in the sunshine and we'll laugh every day. And, you know, that's sort of the what you had to sing on the radio at the time, because you couldn't say we're going to screw each other on top 40 radio. But maybe that's underlying, that's exactly what she's kind of talking about, saying that we're going to have fun and we're, you know, it's going to be a good time, but it's only going to be for a year and then I have to leave and then it's going to be over. Now, a lot of guys may not like this. A lot of guys will be like, well, why can't we just be together forever? And that's understandable. If you listen to the song and you think to yourself, "This I don't like this girl. She just only wants me temporarily." That's understandable. But for some guys, it's hard to commit, you know, to being with one person forever, because maybe it's not going to be great, and maybe you're not going to like her, and maybe you're going to want to end things. You know, and even though she's saying, you know, I'll sing to you each morning, I'll sing to you every night. You know, she's saying like, yeah, we're going to have fun. You know, she's saying that as a proposition. You don't actually know if that's going to happen. I mean, that's how I'm interpreting lyrics. Again, like, I, you know, this is just what I think the lyrics mean. The person who wrote the song is still alive. I could always ask her if I were to have her on my podcast or the premium version of my podcast, but I don't know if I'll be able to track her down, to be honest with you. She really does. She has a pretty low profile, to be honest with you guys. She doesn't really have a high profile on social media. I think she has a website. I'm not 100% sure, but she's kind of tough to find. That's the point I'm trying to make here. So I don't even know if I'll be able to have her on my podcast, to be honest with you. But yeah, so, you know, so, but again, like, you know, this is something we think of in 2024. Like situationships, like short-term relationships, where it's like, it's not like a long-term monogamous thing where you just, you know, you have fun with a guy for a very short period of time, but then it's over. The fact that they were talking about this 60 years ago, you know, it's just crazy that, you know, that this girl wrote a song about this that you think is more commonplace in today's society, not back then, but she was talking about it that 60 years ago. That's fucking crazy. Oh my God. It's insane. That she was talking about, doing that sort of thing. And on the surface, it sounds like an innocent song, but it really, it may have you know, not so innocent undertones, because even in fact, you know, the original, there's an alternate version song that exists where she sings, "I'll never love you. The cost of love's too dear. I'll live with you 1 year," which is crazy. That's like, it's kind of like, yeah, we're going to bang. I mean, that's what she's saying in the song, that I'll live with you for 1 year. That's freaking crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's just wild that she said that in the song. And of course, I think they made her recut the lyric because, you know, it was too explicit for 1964, for 60 years ago. But yeah, so also one other thing I want to talk about the song, and this is just brilliant lyric writing right here. This kind of just helps, you know, helps things out with the repetitive part of the song, repetitive nature of the song, because it's really, the song's only two sections. There's the intro, the verses, and the choruses, and that's it, right? But what she does, and this is so brilliant, and I love when songwriters do this, is that they do a plot twist where they slightly change the chorus just a little bit. They slightly change it, just a hair, just to make things more interesting and to keep, you know, keep things moving instead of just having it be the same thing over and over and over again and repeat. Like, for example, in the first chorus, she sings, "We'll sing in the sunshine." And then for one part of the chorus, one chorus, she said, "We can sing in the sunshine." And then there is another chorus where she sings, "You can sing in the sunshine." And then she switches the perspective, you know, saying like, you're talking about her dad instead of her. And that's brilliant. I love that. That's so cool. Where she switches the perspective for that verse and that chorus. And then the end of the song, You know, and at the very end of the song, she says, we sang the song. So she talks about in past tense versus present tense, future tense. You know, in the beginning of the song, she said, we'll sing the sunshine. In the end of the song, she says, we sang in the sunshine. So sing in past tense. Because then she talks about leaving him, right? And that's really, I love that. When songwriters just slightly change the chorus, just a little bit, just to give it a little bit more, you know, just a little bit more variety in the song. Give it, you know, it breaks up the monotony of the repetitiveness of the song. You know, just slightly changing the perspective of the person singing in the song, or just slightly changing the chorus. It's because it's more or less the same, except, you know, and even at the very end of the song, she's saying, "We'll sing the sun. We sang the sunshine. We laughed every day. We sang the sunshine, then it went away." Where in the other parts of the song, she's saying, "We'll sing in the sunshine. We'll laugh every day. We'll sing the sunshine, and I'll be on my way." So she's saying in future tense, and then she ends it with past tense. Holy shit, that is so cool. I mean, it's almost like in my song, Turquoise Apricot, because I do that in my song too. And another way to think about this is that she does a plot twist. She slightly changes the lyrics and does a little plot twist, and that's brilliant. And I do that in my song, Turquoise Apricot, too, when I sing, you know, when I sing my girlfriend, Turquoise Apricot, and then I switch over and discover that I dump her for an amber pomegranate, and then I say the amber pomegranate of my in the song is my brand new Turquoise Apricot. So it's just, I love that little plot twist when songwriters just slightly change perspective of it to break up the monotony in the song. It's brilliant. I love that. It is so cool. I love it when songwriters do that. I wish more songwriters do that, because that takes a lot of creativity, a lot of thought. That means the songwriter put a lot of thought into those lyrics, and it's clever, it's unique, it's interesting, it's great. I wish more songwriters do that these days. Maybe you should do that if you're a songwriter, if you're writing songs, writing lyrics. Maybe you should employ that little technique, because it's really, really cool. But anyways, that concludes this week's episode. So that concludes part one of episode number 242 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and as per usual, if you learned some really interesting facts about, or actually no, if you actually liked my analysis in this week's song, and you thought it was really, really interesting, and you really liked my little breakdown of the song and talking about the lyrics and the chord changes in the song, and you're around my age, you're a millennial slash Gen Z, you never heard the song before, and you got turned on to it because of me, definitely email me at samltwilliamicloud.com. You can also follow me and reach out to me on Instagram and TikTok at iHeartOldies. Now, as per usual with these episodes, guys, I always plug, you know, the same things that I plug in every single time when I do these podcasts, and one of them is I want you guys to check out the premium subscription version of this podcast. It's an absolute gold mine of just amazing interview content from many 60s music legends, tons of really cool people are talking about really cool songs. It's going to be, you know, so much information is discussed in these interview episodes, stuff you won't find anywhere else. There's so many cool stories from these people, and it's just an amazing, you know, treasure trove of just great information about some of the greatest music ever made from the 60s. So you guys got to check that out. And if you're a record collector and you like to collect vintage clothing and you're a millennial slash Gen Z, this premium subscription version of this podcast is for you. You'll definitely enjoy it. So please go sign up for that. The link to that is in the description episode of this podcast. Also, check out the Spotify and YouTube playlist of this podcast. That's where you hear the songs I talk about whenever I do a new one. You're not going to hear them in this podcast because of copyright reasons, so you only hear them on the playlist, Spotify and YouTube playlist of this podcast. Please go check that playlist, those playlists out. If you have any suggestions for songs I talk about on my podcast that I haven't yet, please email them to me at samltwilliamicloud.com. Also, check out my music too, Sam L. Williams. I'm actually in the middle of reconstructing my website right now, because I recently found out it was still up miraculously. So I might put the link to that in the text description of this podcast when it's ready. I'm not sure, because I have to get a new domain name. So I'm just trying to figure out what I want to do with that. But I am rebuilding my website, so that's pretty exciting because it's still up miraculously. I had no idea it was still up until a few weeks ago. So that's what I'm doing. So yeah. You know, check out my music. I'd really, really appreciate if you guys could listen to it. Because look, man, I mean, you know, the way of paying for a promo company to inflate your streams on Spotify. They're not allowing artists to do that. They're cracking down on those songs that have artificial streams attached to them, and they're taking that stuff down. And I don't want to get my stuff taken down. I don't. I had happened to me once before with a distributor I'll never work with again, with my really old stuff from my high school days. I don't want that to happen again. I really, really don't. But if you guys listen to my music through this, and if you find out about it through this podcast, great, because no real people listen to this podcast. I don't pay for podcast listeners. There's real people listen to this. And, if I get listeners from you guys tuning into my podcast and you follow the links in the text description of this episode's podcast, I put in for every episode of this podcast to my music and listen to it, that helps amp up the strings and helps make things more organic instead of just me paying for a promo company to inflate my streams, which, you know, they're Spotify doesn't want artists doing that. And it's kind of frustrating because they're also taking down songs by artists who claim not to do that. So that's a little frustrating. Even though Spotify claims they have technology to be able to decipher whether or not songs have real streams or not. But yeah, it's really frustrating. But yeah, but anyways, please go listen to my music and, you know, let me know what you think of it. Let me know if it resonates with you. Let me know if you really can relate to the songs and what do you think of the songs, and if you're willing to share it with other people, definitely email me at samltwill@icloud.com. You can also follow me, reach out to me on Instagram and TikTok at iHeartOldies, and check out my new Rebel merch store for the premium versions podcast, Flying Them All Stories. Man, every interview I do, it's like, that is so much what you're getting with the premium version of my podcast, is Flying Them All Stories from people that were there. It's such a cool slogan. It really makes sense for the premium version of my podcast. So link to that is in the text description of this podcast. I got so much more coming out soon. This month I got an interview with Chuck Blasco, an original member of the Fogues. And then next month I got an original member of the Bobby Fuller Four, the original drummer, Dwayne Carrico. That's going to be cool. Yeah, so, you know, putting that one out, because he's got a really scandalous story about Bobby Fuller, who died under mysterious circumstances, because there's a chance that there might be something fishy going on with his death. And he talks about that in the interview. So, yeah. I'm recording more interview episodes. Supposed to do one with the original member of the Box Tops this month, and then hopefully I get to interview the guy who arranged Can't Take My Eyes Off You by Frankie Valli, plus a lot of the other later Four Seasons hits. I interviewed Charlie Colello, who arranged a lot of the earlier ones, but he did a lot of later ones, this other guy, Artie Schreck. In fact, Charlie Colello talked about Artie Schreck in my interview, but Artie Schreck, did a lot of those later Four Seasons records, you know, when Charlie Colello left and went to become a producer for Columbia Records at that point, so in like 1966, in 67, 68 was when he was a producer for Columbia, but by that time, Artie Schreck took over as the arranger for the Four Seasons, so it'll help fill in the blanks, so it'll help kind of bring things full circle by interviewing Artie Schreck. You know, I already interviewed Charlie Colello, now it's time to interview Artie Schreck. So someone told him about my podcast, he's supposed to call me, hopefully he'll do that soon, hopefully I'll get him on, but yeah, so I'm Sam Williams. And thank you guys for joining me for this week's episode of the podcast. Thank you guys for still listening, even though I don't put out as many episodes as I used to. I'm trying to do two a month now, but it's about as much as I have time for. I appreciate you guys for still listening and, you know, for continuing to support my podcast. I really, really do. Until next time, please keep things grooving.